Welcome to She Struts Radio, where we give voice to women's stories, longings, pain, deepest heart's desires, and dreams, and support them in being unapologetically vocal, visible, and vulnerable women, happily claiming their place in the world. Now, here's your host, author and speaker, Deborah M. Ricks.
I mean, really, I know that has nothing to do with what Mama used to say, unless we never know, right? But welcome to She Struts Radio. I just had to play that song, Jill Scott Delivers. That song will be played. We have a show coming up in February, Real Talk About Relationships. Okay, I have a man and a woman coming on so far. And they are going to be my guest. But I just had to play that. tonight. So welcome to She Struts Radio. I am your grateful host, Deborah M. Ricks. And I am joined by my guest co-host this evening, Erica Salee. I'll tell you a little
good
bit about...
Good evening.
Say good evening. She already said good evening. I'm going to introduce you a little bit more, okay? I want to tell people a little bit about you, and I want you to tell them more. And as we have this conversation, as this conversation unfolds, they'll learn more about you than they ever thought they'd know. Well, just sort of kidding. Just embellish you all.
Listen, I appreciate it. I was listening to your intro music, and I was so excited, hello, before you even told me to. So, good evening. Good evening.
It's all good. I love it when people are excited, and I stay excited. So, there's nothing wrong with that. I do want to tell people a little bit about me, because sometimes I come on the air, and I don't tell anybody, and people don't always know me. I have regular listeners. Thank you for joining me again tonight. And I have new listeners all the time. I'm Deborah Ricks, and I am the host of She Struts Radio, and we are here to help women particularly find their voices, okay, because a lot of us, we are in hiding. We don't want to be seen, and we don't want to be heard. And you might even hear this evening, why is that so? Because some of this has been passed down from our mothers. And I just want to be real clear because, you know, sometimes we have very strong feelings about talking about our mothers. I want to put it out there that we can love our mothers, we can even honor our mothers and respect our mothers, and still, you know, we can still talk about them, and we can still point out things that they did that were hurtful, unloving, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm a coach, life coach. I also coach people to write their books, and I'm an author of 3 books, and I'm an editor and a healer. And so I invite you to go to my website at DeborahRicks.com and just learn more about me, and feel free to buy my books and to reach out to me. I love connecting with people. Erica Salee, she's a new friend. I met Erica through someone, and she will tell you a little bit more. I got her brief bio here. I know she has 2 children. I just learned that today. I didn't know that. She has 2 children, a boy and a girl. She's a speaker, writer, and the owner of True Synergy, which is a health and wellness company. She has a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in negotiation and conflict management from the University of Baltimore. And I just got present to, well, I went to the University of Baltimore as well for law school. I went to the law school, and I took a course in negotiation and conflict resolution, one of my favorite courses. So welcome to She Stress Radio, Erica.
Thank you so much, Deborah. It is my pleasure and honor to be co-hosting with you tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you for saying yes. And as we talk, people will hear why I just think it's really interesting, our conversation that we had earlier today. Some of that's going to come out, some of the things we talked about. We're talking this evening about what Mama used to say. And I've talked to, really this show was inspired by a conversation I had with a friend of mine, and that was probably about 2 weeks ago. I lose sight of time, but a week ago or 2 weeks ago, she and I were talking on the telephone, and we were just talking about life, talking about this, that, and another. And somehow our conversation turned to our mothers, and I shared with her something that my mother used to say to me. Now, get this. My mother is a woman of few words. She's a devout Christian. She's been a Christian her whole life, and she's 93 years old, and I'm really grateful for her having such, a long life and longevity, so I'm glad she's still here with us. But my mother didn't say much, and so I can't think of a lot of things my mother used to say, but this one thing she used to say to me and her other daughters just kind of, it stood out, because impacted my relationships with men, right? And so I'll share that in just a moment. And I want to just kind of, I really just want to pause on that, because I don't want to really jump right into that just yet, because that to me is like, there's so much, whenever we talk about relationships, for me, that there's a whole lot there. Because I take everything just about back to relationships, intimate relationships, because if you can understand, for me, and I understand how I operate in my intimate relationships, then I can kind of look at how that shows up in other areas of my life. So Erica and I, we were talking earlier today, and you can share with the listeners what you were saying about when you considered, because I invited folks, I said, I'm inviting someone to co-host this show with me because I love conversation, even though I'm a big talker. I still love the dynamics of conversation, right? So I said, okay, I wanted somebody to co-host, and I was also doing this because I want to invite women to find your voice, because a lot of times women are holding back. And so I put it on the event stage, and I said, I want someone to co-host with me. And Erica reached out to me, and she said that she could wonder whether she would be good for co-hosting this particular show with this topic because?
Well, you know, it's funny. When you, as you and I talked earlier, when I looked at the title, you know, Mama used to say, I thought, let me just think about that real quick before I call her, because at first when I saw your offer for co-hosting, I thought, sure, I can do that. And then I looked at the title and I said, well, wait, you know, what did Mama used to say? I mean, I'm 45. I don't mind saying my age. So I really had to kind of think for a minute if there was something that I could bring to the circle of space that fit with that theme. And so, you know, some very silly things started coming to mind. And really it was the first thing that came to mind was from my grandmother, who used to say that I couldn't sing at the table, like don't sing at the table. You know, it was like I was trying to think of something real deep and real profound, like what did Mama used to say? And I'm like, well, wait a minute, let me think about that before I call Devorah and tell her that I can co-host with her. And as I was standing there thinking about it, that was the first thing that popped into my head. When my grandmother and my mom, too, used to say when we sat down at the table, don't sing at the table. And so I grew up with that don't sing at the table mentality so that when my daughter came of age and she started finding her voice and we would sit down at the table and she would start to sing and I'd say, don't sing at the table. Not even realizing why I was telling her that because I never asked the question. I just didn't do it. And so I got to the point where I started thinking, well, why am I telling her not to sing at the table? And her voice is beautiful. So I thought, let me just stop, you know. And the first time, I will say this, and this is not something you and I talked about earlier, but the first time when I just didn't say anything as she was singing at the table, I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm breaking some rules. I'm doing something wrong because I'm not stopping her from singing at the table because Mama used to say, don't sing at the table. So, you know, it was just that whole open dialogue of, okay, here's a silly thing that just kind of started that whole conversation with us earlier. So it's just amazing how you get into those, as I said earlier, those little some folks on Periscope. But, you know, you just start getting into this mentality of what you can't do or what you shouldn't do or what you shouldn't say because Mama said not to do it, but you never ask the question, well, why, you know?
Yeah, and because we know that, I know when I was growing up, why wasn't a word I could use. I couldn't say why to my parents about anything. And I better not say why did the Bible say, et cetera, et cetera. So really it's just we weren't given permission. I was raised, I'm older than you, I'm 58. I was raised to be seen and not heard. And in some cases, not even to be seen. Get your butt outside. That's where I wanted to be anyway, and I wanted to stay outside as long as I could. But we, you know, we just didn't have a voice. And so it's interesting that, and you and I talked about this earlier, so much came out in that conversation that here we are told not to ask why, right? And then you go off to school where there's a place where you're supposed to ask questions, but now you don't know how. And we show up in our relationship, and that's why this topic is real powerful because we don't unpack a lot of this stuff, and yet we are living by these rules. We are living by most of these are don'ts. We don't hear, we didn't get told, I know my family, I didn't get told a lot of what I should be doing. I was told what I shouldn't be doing. So you get a lot of what you shouldn't do, but now, okay, well, what do I do in these situations? And so when you consider my generation growing up, unlike my daughter, which is great that she's not, you know, I'm glad to live in, during a time where I was smart enough as a parent and old enough, even after I had my daughter, I had my daughter at 37. So I knew I wanted to have a greater respect for my daughter and her voice than I was given, right? Children were treated like some sort of property, like, you know, you were an inanimate object in a sense. And you were, you were like, you know, you were here to you know, it's not that they didn't appreciate you on some level, but it was just a different time. And so when we unpack this, we get to see how these rules, how these don'ts are operating in our lives. And so I'll share here what my mother used to say to her daughters, and that is, she said, and so we're looking at what our mamas used to say about men and motherhood and other women and being a woman, and what our mothers used to say about God and life and money and all of these things. And my mother, again, I say she was a woman of few words, my mother said, told her daughters, don't let a man see you cry. And so you look and you say, okay, my goodness, okay. So I didn't think about that for years. It didn't even occur to me that, you know, that that was even showing up in my life and that it was problematic. And you could see, and I'm sure when I opened the lines that if you didn't think of it before now, some of this may trigger some memories of yours. Like one woman said on Facebook that her mother told her, don't let another woman come stay in your home. And I'm assuming that means if you have a husband, because it's just going to stir up trouble. And I heard that too, not from my mother, from other women. And don't. And this woman also said on Facebook that her mother said, if a man will lie to you, he'll steal from you. So we look at it. At that, and I don't know if that's not true or not,
but you know, Mama, you feel it, right?
Yeah, you know, I know I heard. And so the only thing, though, I remember, Erica, is my mother said, don't let a man see you cry. And so for years, in my relationships with men, I wouldn't cry around a man. I simply would not cry around a man. Would not. And therefore, if I wasn't crying, chances are I wasn't being vulnerable even in my speech. Like I wasn't sharing my heart. Imagine that we go through life and we go through our relationships not sharing our hearts with the man in our life. Okay? So you're not sharing your heart. I'm not crying. And so I'm this stoic individual. Now I want to tell you about my mom. My mom is very stoic. I mean, she is very, very stoic, and she shows, for the most part, she doesn't show emotions. She's starting to do better, you know, and I'm grateful for that. But she grew up, she was one of 18 children. So it's
wow.
My time to cry, isn't it? And they were on a farm with horses and an apple orchard and so forth. And so, and right after slavery. So there's reasons for this. But my point is, here I am in these relationships, and it's killing me. Killing me, because if we're not crying, we're going to be angry and enraged. That emotion, those hurts have to go somewhere. And I wrote about that in a blog I hope you will read called On Becoming a Self-Loving Woman. That I posted that today, and it's all about being vulnerable and forgiving and nurturing your feelings and feeling your feelings. And so I found it interesting, Erica, that as we talked earlier, that when I consider both of us, neither one of us really got a whole lot in terms of conversation, which I knew that. I wrote about it in my first book. My mother did not talk to us. We didn't have conversations. So if we're not having conversations, she's not sharing anything. That was she dropped that, and that was pretty much all I can remember her saying. And that was a don't.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, when we talked earlier, it's amazing how, and I know for me, and I shared this, I said, you know, now that I'm older, my mom and I have such a great, strong relationship. You know, I know that whatever's going on in my space, you know, just hearing my mom's voice and hearing her comforting words, but as I was growing up, it's like, okay, what is something that, you know, just kind of like stuck in my head about, you know, what is it that you're supposed to do, or, you know, how do you act in certain situations, and, you know, all of those different things. I mean, I was looking for a nugget that I could say, yeah, that was it, you know, or that was it. Now, and mind you, my mom was a great mom, and I say this, I said this to you earlier, you know, mom was a single mom, and she did the best that she could, and I was an only child for 10 years. So, you know, that whole dynamic of just trying to think about some of those, like, those key things. And as a child, you know, sometimes you're just so busy being a kid that you just kind of dismiss a whole lot of stuff. But, you know, I can appreciate more of what our relationship looks like right now than maybe what I appreciated when I was younger, because I was trying to figure out, you know, and we talked about this earlier, that, you know, there's always something that you say, you know what, my mom used to say this all the time. Now, my one thing my mom, I can always say this about mom, is that she's a classy woman. And so as I think about, you know, those little nuggets that, you know, she knew how to dress and she knew how to carry herself. And so that's, you know, something that though she didn't say it, I saw it. And so that's something that I can, you know, I feel like that's something that was deposited in me. So she didn't, you know, go around saying, well, you should dress like this and you should do that. It was just the way she carried herself, and she kind of imparted that into me, but it wasn't something that I remember her saying. I just remember seeing it. And that just kind of came to me as we were, you know, talking right now, but it's just so many different things that, that come out of that.
I think that's actually more powerful in some ways anyway. I think it was James Baldwin who said, your children don't do what you say, they do what they see. Mm-hmm. You do. So we do learn from observing our mothers. We have learned. Once again, my generation, my mother's generation, it wasn't about conversation. My mother was, you know, like, my mother was very clean, and she, I mean, right now, if you go to her house, her apartment, you could go, she could tell you exactly where to go in her drawers for whatever. If there's some tweezers, mm-hmm. she could say, go to the top right drawer, to the right in the back.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do that with my drawers, okay? My drawers is like, it might be in that drawer because it's in there somewhere. I some of the things, and then my mother was very much, you know, like you said, there are a lot of things about observing her, some of which, quite frankly, I grew up actually saying, I don't want to be like my mother in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And the reason I said that was because my mother, the dynamics of my mother and father's relationship was such that it looked like my father had all the power. My father was the one who, you know, that my mother said it. My nephew asked her recently, what was the, I think something like the happiest time for her and her marriage to my father, and she said when he left.
Wow.
When he left, y'all were together 25 years, and he left.
Oh, wow.
And so, anyway, that was kind of like, and she stood by that because me and my sister asked her about it later. We just kind of like kept asking her, really? She's like, because she experienced the relationship is not very nurturing, right? So we watched our mothers, and the lessons. I learned a lot of good stuff from my mother, by the way. I did miss the nurturing and the emotional stuff and the conversation. I desired that later in life because I think when you consider, and this is so much we can unpack here, and I'm opening up the lines, ladies and maybe some gentlemen are listening, because I'm going to open up the line, so have your questions or comments ready, because I would love to hear some of the things that your mama said or didn't say, and in some areas that we haven't even covered yet, because there's so much, because we spend all these years with our mothers, right? And We learned from our mothers, but we didn't, you know, because there was no conversation much, none in my household with my mother, none. I had to learn stuff from my girlfriends. Like we were talking earlier, I learned how to use a tampon.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to use mascara. My mother didn't wear makeup because you're in the church and you didn't supposed to wear lipstick and all that. But there were a multitude of things that and when I think about it right now, I think about I probably didn't teach my daughter some of these things either, you know, because
mm-hmm.
hands-on, you didn't say, well, okay, you got your period, let's go in the bathroom, let me show you this,
uh-huh.
let me show you that. I did not get that.
And we talked about that, and it's funny. Yeah, I know, my mom may actually be listening on the line, and she can attest to this, but, you know, as I said, growing up, it was like, you know, using a tampon, it was like, okay, that, and it wasn't just my mom. Then I think about it, it was my mother, my grandmother, my aunts, you know, some of my cousins was like, no, you know, you can't use a tampon because that blood has to flow out, you know. So I grew up with, okay. All right, so I'm not going to use a tampon, and didn't use one until I was probably in my 30s, you know? So it was just one of those things where it was like, that's just not, you don't do that. And so when I used to go on vacation, like if I had my cycle on vacation, okay, well, I might not swim because I didn't know how to use it, and I didn't realize, well, it's okay, though. You know, so that's just one of those things that, and as silly as that sounds, and of course, if there's some gentleman on the line, then, you know, this is not something that's taboo, you know, about women and their cycles and all that. But, you know, we just didn't, that wasn't something that we did, you know. So mom didn't teach me how to do that because her mother probably didn't want her to do it, you know. Right.
And so now I have to say, trying to teach my daughter is a whole other story. Yeah, I didn't even have tampons. My mother's growing up, so I can assure you that. And the sex
yeah.
education, but you know what I was thinking about, Erica, was sex education. Like, when my mom, like, I remember when I got my period, she said, keep your legs closed. That was my sex education.
Really? Wow, okay.
Keep your legs closed. Okay. All right, there you go. There you have it. And there's your lesson. Keep your legs closed. And they must have worked, but I didn't keep them closed, but I didn't have a baby.
37.
Right, 37.
Well, you know, something worked,
I
assure
you,
there
I
you
did
go.
Not keep my legs closed those all those years. I can assure you that I did not. But I do remember that was kind of hilarious. It was like, keep your legs closed. That was it. And she kind of like, you know, it's like, you know, when you really, it's kind of funny. It's really kind of funny now. But with my daughter, fortunately, I started talking to my daughter about sex when she was 3 or 4 or 5 because
really?
She was born doing it. Yeah, I mean, early. My daughter, I told you, my daughter was, I taught my daughter. I hope she recalls this one thing. If I didn't leave anything else with her, I taught her, and I used to say this to her, you teach people how to treat you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the things that I just wanted to instill in her, that you teach people how to treat you. And so one time she did something I didn't approve of, and she looked at me and said, did you taught me how to treat you? You know, she's like, threw it right in my face. And I glared at her. And she was, but my daughter was very, very much like a thinker very early on. She was speaking in full sentences at 18 months. I mean, like full freaking thoughts and sentences. And so I could not, you know, do the okey-doke with her. And so, and walking, you know, and walking and all talking and like she's so grown up. And she used to say some real profound things. I wish I had them on videotape because some of us I can't even repeat. I'm serious because it was like, where do you get that from? One time we were watching TV. She was probably about 4 by that time. And we were watching TV, and two people were getting ready to look like they were about to kiss. And she says, look at them. They're getting ready to make love, and they don't even love each other.
Oh, wow.
So she proved to me that things. We don't teach our children everything. I know she wasn't exposed to all kinds of stuff because I kept a close eye on her and she was with me. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, so I think, like, they just have their own thoughts. So when you think about that, I tried to interact with her in a way because she was knowing things, and I want her to grow up during the time. She was growing up during the time when HIV is here. So I don't even want her to wait till she's 17 to start talking about that.
Exactly.
You know, use teaching moments. So I just wanted to have more of an open kind of, like, be able to talk to my child because I didn't get it. So here it is. We are exactly 7 o'clock. So I'm going to open up the line when we return from a musical interlude. I may finish up with Jill. She is just so fabulous. I love that song so much. And so have your comments and your questions because I really, really want to hear. We want to know, what did Mama say to you about being a woman, men, God, life, money? In my household, we didn't even talk about money except that we didn't have any, right? I was like, oh, no, can't afford that. Can't do this, can't do that. So when you consider your life right now, how much are you living by those rules, those don'ts, largely? Some of you may have heard some do's, so that would be great to hear. And as I go to, you know, before I go, I want to share that I was talking to two women. And both of these women were white, and the reason I bring that up is because it was funny to me some of the stuff that they were saying their mama said. And one of them said that her grandmother would say, don't shake the tablecloth at night. Don't shake the tablecloth out at night. And I'm looking at her saying, oh, what's that about? And she said, her grandmother said, don't shake the tablecloth out at night. You'll shake away people. Superstition, right? And so, did you ever do it? And see, because somebody lost a baby after they did it, right? Okay, and so a baby died. And then another woman, she said her mother would say, you can make money with your brains or your back. It's easier to make money with your brain. Now, guess what, Erica?
Wow.
I thought she was talking about prostitution.
That's what I'm thinking. Well, what was she talking about if it wasn't that? That's immediately where my mind
went. She was talking about, like, hard labor.
Oh, okay. See? All right, that makes sense, but that's not what I was thinking. Okay.
I'm glad it wasn't just me, because I was like, your mother's something. She's saucy, and she's something. I thought she was saying,
right.
You can either sleep your way to success, or you can get
an education. That's exactly what I thought. Okay, all right.
Well, good. I'm not by myself, because I was looking at her ready for the rest of it. I was like, wow, your mama.
You thought that was the makings of a hot romance novel or something steamy, right? Oh, wow.
I was ready for the next. I was ready, and she said, no, she's talking about hard labor. You can either do back-breaking work or you can get an education. I was like,
Got it. You were like, darn, I thought there was something else coming.
But you see the way that both of us are thinking. So it's not 50-50 chances are a lot of people would think the way we're thinking. Some people might think the way her mother intended, but either way, no right or wrong way. So when I come back, press 1 if you'd like to add your voice to this conversation.
My good. I know that all things are working for my good. Yeah, she's intentional, never failing. All things are
working for my good.
She's intentional. And it's never failing. All things are working for my good.
For my good.
He's intentional.
Let me tell you something. No matter who you had as a mother, all things are working for your good. No matter what she said, no matter what she didn't say, you had the right and perfect mother for the journey that you're on, for your destiny. I know that to be sure. I have the right and perfect mother. Welcome back to She Stretch Radio. We're talking about what our mamas used to say. Joining in this evening is Erica Salee. She's a speaker. She's a seminar leader. And she has a book coming out soon. We'll talk. Of course, I'll have her back on the show when the book is available, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
you will.
Yes, I will. Mm-hmm. And so I want to say this because as I was listening to this young man, I love this song, All Things Are Working Together for My Good. I want those of you who are mothers, and I want to say this to all mothers, I really appreciate you because no matter what you did or didn't do, what you said or didn't say, one, you allowed us to be birthed through you, to come to this planet, to have this experience, right? My mother didn't abort me. I'm here because she said yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I salute you, Mother Maddie Sue Ricks, Maddie Sue Hairston Ricks. I salute you. And all of the mothers on the line, all of you listening to the replay, I salute you because we all are doing the best that we know how. As Queen Maya Angelou was known to say, when we know better, we do better. And my mother, at 93 years old, has learned how to say, I love you. I never heard it as a child. She now says, I love you. My mother at 93 years old called me 2 times recently. It was not in her repertoire to call me. Her paradigm was, you're the child, you're my offspring, you call me one way. Yeah, I don't call you. But I mentioned it to her that I didn't understand this, and she started calling me. So
wow.
Still learning at 93. So I salute mothers. And so as we talk about this evening, it's all about love so that we can be better mothers and better women, better healers, right? We can be more so because we are becoming aware of some of the things that we have inherited. And I'm about to go to the line, and I want to say this because I will forget. But I finally got to a place, Erica, where I had to say, Mother, I'm going to let go of this not crying in front of a man. If I can take all my clothes off and be naked physically with this man, then I can be naked emotionally with him.
Emotionally. Mm.
And guess what? I started doing that, and that has evolved me. Because as women, and particularly black women, the reason why we have some of the challenges, I believe, in our relationships is because of those rules. Be strong. You don't need a man. Get an education, because a man can't be counted on. So I know my mother didn't say all of these things, but I've heard enough of it from enough women that somebody's mother has said this. And men, some of the fathers have said these things. And so as we unpack this, we are loving our mothers and loving ourselves as mothers, whether we have given birth to a child or not. We still have the mothering ability, the mothering instincts, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have some folks that want to get in. I'm going to let them do some talking because, girlfriend, you know, I can go. Let me let's see. 5-4-4-3-5-2-5. Mm-hmm. Welcome to She's Just Radio. Your name?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi.
This is Jeanette.
Hey, Jeanette.
Hey, Deborah.
Jeanette is the one who, she's the cause for this show. She's part of my answer for this show, our conversation. It is her.
Oh, okay. Welcome, Jeanette.
Hi. Okay, well, I intentionally made sure I listened to the show tonight. Yeah, I'm one of those on and off again listeners, and I welcome your guests too. Now, what Mama used to say, I was telling Deborah what my mama used to tell us was when we go over people's house and they offer us something to eat, that we were not to accept it. And I don't know why she used to tell us that, but, you know, we were never wanted it to get back to her that, you know, that we ate over anybody's house, so we wouldn't eat over other people's house. And, no, we weren't hungry or anything. You know, we ate pretty good at home. But that was one of the things she used to tell us, and I never understood it or questioned it. I just did it, obeyed what she said.
Well, you know,
you obeyed it.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Oh no, you wanted to get back to your mom that you know you went over somebody's house and you ate something, and you'd be in trouble. Yeah.
And you know, as I listen to you, Jeanette, it's the first thing that comes to my mind, and I think Deborah and I talked about this a little bit earlier, but you know, there was a certain level of pride. You know, for our families growing up in the times that you know, our parents' generation. And so for you to go to somebody's house and they offer you something to eat, it's like, oh, you know, does that make it look like you're not being fed or that you're hungry? And, you know, then that comes, you know, that looks a certain way about your family, like, oh, maybe they can't afford to feed you. Maybe it was part of that mentality, you know. It just, I think a lot of the stuff that we get and we've carried into some of our adult life comes from, you know, those times in which our parents lived and, you know, the difficulty that they probably faced and all these things they probably developed as like these, you know, mechanisms to protect themselves and to protect their family, you know, protecting you from having somebody think that you weren't being fed at home. So just don't eat, you know, don't eat what they give you, you know. So it's very interesting though.
Yeah, yeah. And my mother was a very prideful woman. She had a lot of pride. You know, and I still does to this day, you know. So, yeah, I can understand it now. But then, you know, I didn't question it. I just did what she told us to do, you know.
Yeah. I think a lot of us did that. That's exactly it.
Yeah, we didn't question it. I told Jeanette, though, see, we grew up, my father was an evangelist, and he would travel, and we were a big family. It was 9 of us, and there were times when we were really hungry, so they did not make that rule for us, and thank you, Jesus, because I would have broken that rule. Mom, you just go. So you telling me they offering me some fried chicken, and we don't have the food in the refrigerator.
Mama, you say, you daggone right, I'm going to take it.
Right, and you just going to have to beat me when I get home, whatever the consequences are. I take them, but he'll beat me on a full stomach.
Full stomach, yeah.
Right here. So my mother, we didn't have that rule. But you know, you're right, Erica. There was a time, I remember back then, we hated welfare. Like, back then, they would give you that cheese and all of that kind of stuff. And it was a shameful thing. It was a shameful thing because my parents, they grew up, you provided for yourself and your family. You don't get no handouts. And so you're right. It was about a lot of this, you know, and even when I think about this saying, which I never thought about it this way, it's like, what goes on in this house stays in this house.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that has to do with, you know, like you know, ain't nobody's business what's going on in this house.
yeah, exactly.
So it makes sense. It does make sense when you unpack this stuff. You get to see from their perspective a bit, you know, that even though it may have affected us in a way that, you know, later on, like with the relationship stuff, but not crying with the man, my mother was probably saying it for my own good, she thought. She probably thought she was doing, you know, something good.
Mm-hmm.
Don't cry.
Because she probably wanted you to be strong and independent and not have to get that emotion wrapped up in, you know, or emotionally attached, I guess, and maybe the crime was a submission of that. So from her perspective, I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just
Mm-hmm. But, you know, and here's the thing. I don't think it served her in her marriage, though, if I may be so bold to say. My father was a very, loving, affectionate man, and my mother was the opposite. So her not being vulnerable, that ain't serving us in our relationships with our men.
Yeah.
You know, if you know anything about men, whether we accept it or not, a man wants a woman that's going to be soft and vulnerable and able to cry without lashing out. Because when we are not able to cry, we shut down or we lash out. It's going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
So it did not serve my mother in her marriage, but she passed it on to me. And it has me thinking what some of the things I would never have thought about but for this show, what emotionally, what some of the things I want to have a conversation with my daughter just to explore some things, right?
Yeah.
Just to see, you know. Just one day we're driving along somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Jeanette.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks, Jeanette.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to continue to enjoy the show.
All right. Okay. 904-994. Welcome to She Stress Radio. Who's calling? 904-994.
Great and powerful day, Deborah. How are you?
I'm great. Who's this?
Awesome. This is Amir.
Hi, Amir. I thought it was you, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Oh, you know it. But anyhow, you know, I listened to your show, and thank you for the invite. And, Erica, I appreciate your standing in as a co-host to join in this revealing conversation. But,
thank you.
You know, I find out it wasn't just mama. Daddy doesn't do nothing either. So we came from a society or a generation where communication was, I said it, that's it, that's not, worry not.
Mm-hmm.
So it has produced a generation of people who had to get over these traumatic roadblocks of just communicating with one another. You know, Deborah, you talk about you and your five sisters. You said you come from a family of nine. There was some possible men in the house. that had to live these same horrific statements of lack that they had to overcome like you have. And so wonderfully successful, thank God for consciousness, we are overcoming them. Our fathers didn't, if they were there, their main job was to provide food. And when they came home, they didn't want to talk, they didn't want to do anything but what they wanted to do or allowed to do, and if they came home at all. So we still didn't get anything from our birth parents to make our journey into this process called adulthood any more lavished. We only got what we got because we started seeing certain things and doing certain things, irregardless to the what mom and daddy used to say. I can't put it all on my mom because not one of our mothers produced a child without the assistance of a father. So therefore, our parents didn't say X, Y, Z about any of the litany of statements that you made about God, about money, about men, women, about relationships, about friendships, about any of those things. They were an outside force that taught us everything we know about the things that we find lavish. For instance, if you were a Girl Scout, Mama wasn't a Girl Scout. If you were a Boy Scout, Daddy wasn't a Boy Scout. You played volleyball or some collegiate sport in high school, cheerleading, whatever, those unified organizations taught you more about life's expectancies than our parents did. I learned a whole lot more on the football field and the basketball court than what I learned at the dinner table. Like you, or like I heard someone say, Erica said to about her mom, say, don't sing at the table. And Erica, you probably have a beautiful voice. But whatever it was, maybe grandma couldn't sing. And singing at the table was a horrible experience.
Yeah.
Understandable.
And what was
well,
that?
I have to sing.
You know, I don't have a clue. First of all, I just want to honor you, Amir, for just being the gentleman voice on the line. Because so many times, you know, we cater our conversation to women, and so it's nice to just hear you on the line. I just wanted to say that. And I don't really know what that was about. Like, to this day, and I was even sharing with my daughter earlier talking about this show, and I was like, you know, as I stand here and I talk to you, I don't know where that came from. So I don't know if there was something that happened a long time ago, and some I don't even want to try to figure it out, but it just, now I just am grateful that I appreciate the fact that it doesn't make sense and there's no reason why I should prevent it from happening in my own family, you know. So it's and another thing you touched on to me, and I just want to say this really quickly, is that you talked about, you know, you just didn't ask why. And Devorah and I talked about this earlier. You didn't ask your parents, you know, or whomever, you know, whether it was your aunt, your uncle, your grandmother, or whomever, you didn't ask why. You just didn't do it. And so, you know, my own daughter, as I would reprimand her for certain things and she would ask why, it was like, don't ask me why, it's because I said so. And as a parent, you do have some right to say that. But then you start thinking, well, you know, if you want to explain to your child why this is wrong, then, yeah, they get an explanation, because in that way they'll know why not to do it again. It wasn't a matter of being disrespectful, which is
correct,
the reason why I think we could never say it. But, you know.
Well, even funnier, I was talking to my mom about a couple months ago, and she said, you could have asked me that. I'm like, Mom, I'm 50 years old.
Really?
I said, Mom, really? She said, yeah, y'all had a lot of decisions to make in the house. I'm like, why
yeah,
did you
okay.
tell us? She said, because if I told you, you might not have did what I desired or wanted you to do. I'm like, so we didn't have those kind of options, Mom. We did what you said, and that was it. We did what Dad said, and that was it. End of the conversation. She says, well, you had options.
Yeah,
you
might
not,
have.
You had
but see, she's saying that, how did you experience her when, as a child? That's more telling than her saying it now. I mean, really, we knew
well,
you could not say, you could not ask why.
Yes. Like you, Devorah, we were church children as well. We knew what was going to happen on Sunday morning. We knew what was going to happen on Thursdays. We knew what was going to happen on Tuesdays. There was no way that there was a calendar needed. We knew that the church doors were open, we were there. Matter of fact,
right,
they were glad to see the prices show up. So because they knew that, hey, we got a couple of singers, we got a couple of people to do musical instrument. We had it going on. However, when I started taking my musical talents to mainstream in the marching band and the concert band, then it became a whole nother issue. And I was like, wow, this is, because of course now I'm not doing it for God. Of course, now that I know that if I took a deep breath, it was God sanctioned. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn a lot after the coming to my, I will never forget, it was the summer of my 18th birthday. My parents would take me to the airport. I was going off to Air Force in college. My dad said to me, I love you. And I damn near missed my flight because I didn't know what to do. I'm like, I literally stood there, and they called my name before I moved to run down the plank to my flight. I literally was, and the first day, 2 days out in Colorado, I didn't know what the heck to do. I was like,
because that was your first time hearing him say that.
That was my first time recognizing him saying those three words.
Wow.
And then about 2 years before he passed, he says, son, I'm really proud of what you've done.
Aww.
And I was like, okay. So all this time that I've kept myself away from you and saying to myself, I'm going to be a better father, a better parent than what I was exemplified to do, it became difficult for me, because I'm saying, but that's my dad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandfather relationship and I was like, dad, I had a dad? I got a granddad. Anything I desired, everything I wanted to know, he was eager and ready to tell, and it was like, wow, this is my grandfather was an avid fisherman and a minister. He was a pastor down in Miami. So whenever I wanted to do anything, I said, hey, tall dad, let's go fishing. And we go fishing. 6-7 hours later, I come back looking like a lobster and full of fun and knowledge. But it was a difference between the parental to the grandparents. It was a powerful transformation.
I think that's always the case. I had a conversation with my daughter about that. It's like grandparents. I mean, my daughter and my mother's relationship is like it's something to marvel at. And because my mother is just different with my daughter, and so it's the dynamic. You know, it's like they get a second chance, the grandparents. The second chance of being the kind of parent to this grandchild that they weren't to their children. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and then they get, you know, they can have still some kind of distance and still be close and connected, because the distance is, you know, I didn't give birth to you, and I don't even have to pay for all your stuff, and I ain't got to see, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different
That's true.
But, you know, I wanted to say this, that came up for me, that our parents, just like I know I was thinking about as a parent, I always kept in front of me that the job of a parent is to raise my child so that she won't need me at some point. Like, she really won't need me to provide for her, et cetera, et cetera. Hopefully she'll always want me in her life, but she won't need me to do certain things. Well, our parents, given the time they grew up, I'm wondering, what were their thoughts about raising us? And were they also thinking, I'm not saying they were or were not, were they also thinking, I want to raise my child so that he or she can do X, Y, Z? Now, given that, I do know that when you consider during the time that my mother and father were born and they were raising children, we were fresh out of slavery, right? We weren't that far out of slavery, and segregation was thick. it was, you know, Jim Crow and all of that. And when you consider, and you as a man in there, you might even relate to this in a different way, that there was this, it was all about one, provision, clothes, you know, making sure you're safe, making sure you stay alive as a man, not be lynched or not, because we really, you know, the trauma, when you consider the trauma that we experience as black people in the country, what if we had a conversation with them, if they could emote and could share, we would be blown away perhaps with their thoughts about why they did so-and-so. And, like, respect, I think singing at the table they saw as lack of respect for something.
Mm-hmm.
For them,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm sure it has something to do with respect. And so...
And I think a lot of it probably, and I didn't mean it, but I didn't. I wanted to just stay right there
mm-hmm.
with you. A lot of this comes from respect or lack of because of that time period. It's like, you know, you said your parents, you know, we were fresh out of slavery. So all of that probably came from, hey, we weren't respected because we were treated a certain way and we were beaten and we were brought over here and, you know, all of that. And so then that just kind of wove itself into the next generation. And so here's where we have the choice to break the cycle. But I think all of what we're talking about on some level, if we just kind of tie the, you know, connect the dots, it probably goes back to that very thing, respect.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. 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 How important. And that they also consider this. If I was treated like less than an animal, if I was treated like I wasn't a man, if I was talked to like I was a boy, if I was talked to like I wasn't, like, my mother did domestic work. And I remember going to one of her jobs with her and the little white boy calling her by her first name. I could not wrap my mind around this. How do you call my mother, old enough to be your grandmother,
mm-hmm.
her first name? You see? And so... When you go back home as a woman, you're gonna respect me in my home. You're gonna respect
mm-hmm.
us. And I mean, I'm loving this conversation because I'm understanding and I'm getting present to some things that I don't think about every day.
Yeah.
When it comes to my mother, because when you consider the shoes she walked in, the shoes your father walked in the mirror, and my father and your father. Erica, you consider the times. It really changes the narrative. It makes you consider things and look at things that are and sort of more compassionately for me. More
mm-hmm.
compassionately. Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I identify with several things in that transition. For instance, it used to drive me insanely crazy for someone to call me other than the name that I said, this is what you will call me. Because I was with my dad one day. He was a trucker, and his hobby was stock car racing. And one of the track managers called him, "Hey, Jim." And I know my dad's name.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept walking and didn't realize that my dad wasn't beside me anymore. Next thing I know, this dude was giving him the business. I said, "Dad, why'd you stop?" He says, "He called my name." I said, "Okay." Years went by, and it didn't dawn on me why I didn't like that name. Because with me being his junior, someone called me that, and I kept walking, ignoring them. "You heard me call you?" I'm like, kept going. It was about maybe 5-6 years ago I realized what it was. I said that when you ask me what's my name and I share that with you and you choose to take your own derivative of that name, like Robert, "Hey, Bob, how you doing?" Or
mm-hmm.
or Joe. Or I didn't like that. If you ask me what my name is, Amir, and you say, "Hey, Eddie, how you doing?" No, you don't know me like that.
And so, to that point, is that a lack of respect? Do you think that's does it go back to respect?
It was respect, belittling,
mm-hmm.
Not allowing you to be the equal to who he is because he's the track owner or whatever, or the business mm-hmm. owner, and you're my employee. So therefore, I'm just going to call you whatever I want to call you. I'm paying you to do a job. I ain't paying you to be social with me. Okay, mm-hmm. I get all that. And, yes, it was my parents' real relief to see all six of their boys at home, safe, unbeaten, unscarred, untorn apart by society's issues and ills. Yes, I respect that and receive that. So the little conversation that they had was, if you see them, don't say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I will never forget my great uncle's funeral. You know, you go to these funerals and you're expecting certain things. But when I get to the funeral and I see all of these Caucasian white people,
I'm like, okay, why are these white people at the funeral on the family side? Don't they know there's another side to sit on, like outside somewhere? And you know, Deborah, with my complexion, you wonder, you can't be talking like that, knowing you. So it dawned on me that there was a very large population of whites that are in my immediate family. It's like, okay. And I sat by one woman, and she looked at me, she said, hey, baby. I'm like, Aunt Elizabeth? You're a white woman. She says, no, honey. No, I'm not. I said, okay. And so in between our conversation and the service, it was so funny that I looked at my family as something different from what society was actually portraying to us. So then I said, oh, okay, things are starting to make a little more sense. You're right. But one thing that I want to add to this conversation that's probably more profound than anything else.
And then we're going to let you go and let someone else jump in.
Thank God. Do you now eat your dessert when you desire to?
Mm-hmm. No. You're supposed to eat your dessert after you
eat your meal.
You know, I do. I eat. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the least of them. Yeah. My daughter, I think when you have children, so much can happen in terms of how you look at the world. Before I had a daughter, had a child, I didn't even understand what my mother went through in some real basic ways. She raised, you know, like 9 children, and here I am. I not struggle per se, but, you know, it takes something to be a parent. Anybody who's a parent knows that. And so I had a greater mm-hmm. appreciation. So some things I just like. This whole conversation is just really affecting me. It's just causing me to appreciate my mother.
Yes.
I know you start talking about fathers. We could actually do a show about that, because to me, that's a whole nother ball of wax, if you will. I mean, we really can.
Yeah.
I would love to actually have a show around that, because to me, that when you think about it, me as a woman, the influence of a father or the absence of a father. So maybe I'll, you know, we'll do a show about that. So thank you, Amir. Thank you for coming.
My joy. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Continue to show love and light on our lives. We love you.
Thank you. Thank you, Amir. So if you, I know if you're listening, you got to have something, your mama has said or didn't say, because me and Erica, that's what we got present to, was that, you know, it's really kind of when Erica and I were talking, it's like, wow, if I can't remember much of what my mother said, then that's as poignant as the things that she might have said.
Did say. Mm-hmm.
And what impact? I know I talked about it earlier, but it is significant to me that when we use our voice is one of the most, if not the most powerful tool. I would say it is the most powerful tool, because even if we're not speaking it, if we're writing it, you know, writing something is everlasting. You're putting your thoughts out into the world. and for the purpose of inspiring or transforming another life, changing someone's mind, lifting someone up, encouraging mm-hmm. someone. So our voice is so powerful. So when I think about growing up, I was a very, very shy child, and a lot of my friends probably can't wrap their brain around that. I didn't talk much. I was 15. I was a wallflower. I was 15, and I made a decision around age 15 that I didn't want to go through my whole life so shy that I couldn't speak. And I began at age 15, pushing myself to speak. And I remember when I went to college, I had to push myself. I went to a predominantly white college, and I had to really, I had to actually, make an agreement with one or two other women that we would talk in the class, because it was just that terrifying to me. So I say that because when you consider growing up and you're not having conversations in your family, how do you find your voice? Mm-hmm. Many of us experience that. And now, so it will help you understand why it's difficult for you to speak up in your relationship, to speak up on your job, to speak up in school, to speak up when you need to in a meeting, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
So I know who this is, 868. She's
hey,
just Boris, radio.
Aza.
Hey,
hi, Erica. Hi, Delora.
Hi, Aza. How are you?
I am great. How are you guys doing?
I see all
good,
your comments. Aza. You're posting to Facebook, so nice
yeah,
to have you on the
yeah.
live.
I try. And I do that for two reasons. One is that, you know, I definitely want to support my friends and promote my friends and, you know, co-promote, co-market. The second is that I have ADD. So when I take notes, it helps me to focus. So I take notes on everything. so ADD can work for you if you let it.
There you go.
Yeah. But what did I want to add? Two things. One was that I always start by talking about some book, right? So, Deborah, you know I'm reading Outliers right now. And interestingly enough, I just sent this quote to my friend Anna this morning, who called in, and she was doing an article about mamas in the community. So synchronicity that she published her post today on mamas, and you're having this conversation about mamas. No coincidences, right? And I said in this quote or this thing that I sent her that I was reading the part of Outliers last night where it was talking about the one of the differences between geniuses. I'm on the chapter, The Trouble with Geniuses. And it said even people with high IQs, the difference between people with even high IQs who succeed and those who don't really had to do with their backgrounds at home. And that a lot of it had to do with what they were taught and a sense of healthy entitlement, because we often hear entitlement as something that is a negative thing, which I completely get because I was a teacher or have been a teacher. I've actually been working with kids since I was a kid. But I was a full-time teacher for the last 5 years. Now I teach part-time, and I see the negative effects of entitlement. But what he's talking about is the part of what you guys said, when you get to ask why. He talked about these parents who have conversations with their children and empower their children to ask questions of authority. And examples he gave included, talking to them on the way to the doctor and saying, hey, is anything wrong? Is anything going on? Make sure you let the doctor know what's going on, or being able to talk to the principal or talk to the teacher, and how those skills really make the difference between whether or not some people, even if they're really smart, whether or not they can actually succeed in the real world, communication being a very, real world skill. So you know, one of the quotes that I've written from you guys is the part where Brother Amir said, I learned a lot more on the football field and on the basketball court than I learned at the dinner table. You know, that's powerful. And I also, you probably guys haven't gotten to it yet, but I'm on Twitter, posted something about that ask why. You know, my sister, who is a very, very bright scholar, used to have a shirt after the whole Enron scandal that said, ask why. You know, because so many times the disasters of the world have come from people just going, okay, you know. So that's,
yeah.
That question is so essential, and it's one of the skills in my teaching that I really, you know, try to guide my students to. Our three essential questions in writing were always, what's my point, who cares, why?
Which is totally different from what we, you know, it's totally different. It's a paradigm shift, because for so long we were told, you know, don't ask me why, just because.
Right.
But
right.
Now,
and I have to check myself in my own parenting with that.
Exactly. And that I'm like that too. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, and there are times when you have to go there, but it's like, you know, just, okay, let me just explain to you, you know. So it's definitely different than what we're used to, because I know there were times when my mom would say, don't ask me why, because I told you.
Yeah, and so,
yeah,
thing I'm grateful
so
for.
Yeah,
exactly, empowering.
I want to emphasize this. It's so disempowering to us, and what I have to say about what you said about healthy entitlement, that stuck in my craw. Because let me tell you, we don't have much of what we desire in life because we don't feel entitled to it, and that's healthy entitlement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when you mentioned that's all I could hear. I mean, I heard the other things you were saying, but that was the thing that just kept, like, reverberating through my spirit, because when that's the sense of worthiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My mother would go to the doctor. She wasn't taught to question the doctor. And fortunately I learned how to do that, and I was in the hospital many decades ago, and I was asking healthy questions and possibly saved my life because of something they was doing that they shouldn't have been doing. But you see, and so yeah, we have to allow our children, not only allow them, but do like you're doing, teaching those who don't get it at home to
right.
ask questions,
right.
to use your voice.
Right.
Wow.
I had a friend who taught in Asia, and she said that was really a difficult concept for them to get, because they're taught that as well. Like, don't ask questions, we're just here to get information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is a skill that has to be taught. I give credit to my mother, you know, to my own mom, for having so much patience with my child, particularly during the why stage. That why stage, I always say, question like a four-year-old, right? So four-year-olds are just known for why. And the fact that she would just really take it as far as she could, you know, with answering her questions. So that was really inspiring for me to see, which brings me to my second point. One thing I wanted to say that my mama taught me, on a positive note, she used to always say, big people talk about ideas, average people talk about things, and small people talk about people. And that was drilled into my head, you know, particularly during the stage, middle school, high school, when all I wanted to do was gossip and talk about people. And she would constantly say, big people talk about ideas, average people talk about things, little people talk about people. And then it got to the point where, you know, I could finish her statement, right, because I knew where she was going. So I teach that to my students as well. And when I taught middle school and was, you know, fortunate enough to have that same group for 3 years, you know, they got to the point where they could finish the statement too. Just the big people talk about ideas. Okay, average people talk about things, little people talk about people.
Yeah. And who wants to be average or small?
Ew,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Awesome.
I heard that years ago. I heard that statement years ago, and it is a very powerful statement. And if you just live by that,
alone, you got to be smarter. And I can tell you one thing. I noticed that I get bored real quick with just talking about people and things. So I get bored real quick. I'm ready to shut it down. I'm ready. Okay, that's enough. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and people can be fascinating. You know what I mean? Like if you're telling me your story or someone's story, that's great. A good biography, I'm with it. But, you know, gossip, people don't bring me gossip anymore because I'll usually turn it around.
Something positive. Nobody wants to gossip with anybody like you. Some people
right.
don't want to gossip with Bellway, right? You know, you're like, don't even go to her. It's not going to be fun, okay?
Right.
Look, you might, yeah, that's a powerful thing.
Asia, we know someone also, I won't call her name, but it's a positive thing I'm saying about her. But if you even, some people you look at and you even look like you're about to say something about someone else, you know all you're going to do is get a look. You're going to get a silent treat. You know, you just
shut
get a
you down
treat.
Real quick.
They shut you right down. And there's no need going there with this person because they're not going to take it anywhere. It won't be fun. It won't be fun. They're going to make you feel like, you know, just like I posted on my page something about every time I judge another person only reveals where inside of me needs to be healed or something like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And my mother posted the same thing, so you guys were on the same wavelength. But okay, I get it.
Your mom?
My mom posted the same thing around the same time you posted it. I said, okay, I get it.
We don't have to worry about that. But it has been delightful to hear you, my dear. So as we wrap up, thank you, Asia.
Sure thing. Always a pleasure.
So, Erica.
Yes.
Did I catch you taking a sip of your wine?
No, I'm just sitting here, like, just kind of taking in this whole conversation. Like, it's so much that, you know, we could probably have a show for another hour, and there's so much just stuff that's rich and so true. And it kind of goes across, you know, all families. You know, several people came in, Amir and Asia. Did I say that right? But, you know, you kind of hear those common threads. So it's just like, wow, so much. So I'm just excited.
Yeah, and wow, you're right about that. I have a deeper appreciation for my mother just talking about this and because we don't think very much. I know I haven't not really think about the social environment that she grew up in. When me and my sister, we go to visit my mother, there are times when we're asking her questions. But we're taking her outside of the context of the time she grew up in as well. And even looking at her family, she grew up on a farm with 17 siblings and her mother, I remember my grandmother was, ooh, Lord, she scared me. She scared me. She would yell. She would yell so loudly. I felt like I would just hop off the floor just from the vibration of her voice. She was so scary. She was the matriarch for real. I hardly remember my grandfather. I remember how he looked, but I don't remember him saying much because grandmother ran that freaking house.
You know, she said enough for both of them, it sounds like.
She said enough. She ran that household, right? They had a store, my grandparents, they had a store. They had horses. They had an orchard, you know. So they were doing well back during that time. My mother was born in 1922. But I say this to say, you can't take people outside of the context of their lives, of the what was going on in America and the world, and just say, that was wrong, that wasn't right, you didn't do good.
Oh, yeah.
It's not fair to them.
That's what shaped them. Exactly. And, you know, one of the things I want to say, I know we're probably wrapping up, but you said something that I just kind of, it just resonated with me, and that is no matter what type of relationship, you know, you have with your mother or, you know, whether it was good or bad, up or down or whatever, she gave us life. It was just a gift. You know, it could have been different. There could have been so many other circumstances, but just the fact that we're here, that's a blessing outside of everything else. And then we choose how we use that blessing to either give it back to our mothers or to cultivate something different or whatever, or give something back to our children. We can make the choice, but the blessing is that we're here. So I just wanted to acknowledge you for saying that, because when you said it, I said, oh, that's so true.
Yeah, we're here, and they didn't. I had thought many times my father was on the road traveling, and he was out preaching the gospel across the country, and my mother wasn't a crack addict.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm saying she didn't go a heroin addict, or she didn't leave us, in other words. And she, whatever, it could have been anything. She could have been out with
him.
She could have been out just hanging out in the clubs or whatever, or wherever people hang out when they're not with their children, right? But she was home with us, and she was washing and cooking and cleaning and making sure that we were, you know, that we were learning what she knew to teach. So I got to give her a call.
Absolutely.
That I appreciate her, and I've done that some, but tonight it's like,
it's a little different.
Exactly. And I just want to say this because I know we didn't get around to it, but there's so many areas like God. I could go on and on about them. That was a lot. We got to talk a lot about God in our household, or I should say, we didn't talk about God as much as God was present because my father was a minister. But once again, that was an area you couldn't ask why anything in the Bible and all of that. I just applaud any of us, like you and I and any of us at Asia, or any of us, well, Asia's a little younger. She's a little younger than both of us. But I applaud people. In other words, if you were raised in a family where you were told you can't use your voice, nobody wants to hear you, you were raised in a family that was rather repressive, and you now have a voice, you use your voice, I applaud you. I applaud myself for finding my way to go to law school, to write 3 books, to be doing radio, because it has taken me work. It takes courage to use a voice that's been silenced.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to share that we got some shows coming up. I have a show coming up, I told you. So February 11th, Asia and Deletta will be co-hosting. They're gonna take over the show again, and they're gonna do what they're gonna do. They haven't told me what they're gonna do yet, and that's all good. But I know it'll be so. Listen on February 11th. And then I have a show in February. I think it's the 18th. We're gonna talk about relationships. I wanted to do it prior to
Valentine's Day.
But nevertheless, the 2 people weren't available. So maybe I'll do one, maybe next week. I'll see. Maybe we can talk about love, because we don't talk enough about love. So thank you, Erica, for being here. So I want to just let people know, because they're trying to tell us we got to go. You've been listening to She's Just Radio, and I'm your host, Deborah M. Rickson. And my co-host has been the lovely Erica Salee. She's a speaker, forthcoming author, and she's a writer. And also, she has a company called True Synergy, a health and wellness company. Any last words? I'm going to just, this quote I got from Criminal Minds of all places last night, which I never watched this show. It was funny, but I meant to say it earlier, but it says, the influence of a mother in the lives of her children is beyond calculation. And the author of that quote is James E. Faust. I looked him up. Very interesting man from what I can see. Any final words, Erica?
You know, I just want to first of all say thank you for allowing me to be on this platform with you. There's so much that I felt from this call, from your listeners who offered their comments. And so I just say things that our moms used to say or didn't say are things that certainly help to shape who we are. Some good, some not so good. And as I just said, we have a choice on how we shape that for our lives in the present space and for our children. And it has a lot to do with us as individuals and humans and how we walk through this life and our purpose. And so I just want to say I appreciate you and all of your listeners who may not have chimed in with a comment, but who were on the line nonetheless. And I appreciate them for doing so. So thank you.
Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to sharing airways with you again, Erica, and thank you, listeners. She could have been anywhere, and I just say be kind to yourself. You've been listening to She Struts Radio with Deborah M.
Pieces of the dream I left behind.